Hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Nitan.
And this is Stories from the East and West, telling you little-known stories from Central and Eastern Europe that changed our world.
2021 marks the 76th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp, a place where during World War II, over a million people were deliberately murdered or perished due to its extremely severe conditions. We strongly believe that keeping the memories of such events alive is our duty, even more so now when most of the people who witnessed it are gone.
As much as we might learn about these death camps at school, we rarely hear from people who experienced them firsthand. Today, we're going to hear the story of Anastasia Gulay, one of the oldest living survivors of Auschwitz.
She was 18 when she was taken to Auschwitz and remains one of a handful of people who are able to share an image of the camp seen through adult eyes. Anastasia is 95 years old today, and our producers visited her at home near Kyiv in Ukraine.
Coming up on Stories from the East and West.
Zlin, Praha, Warszawa, Madrid, London, Paris, New York, Casablanca.
Where you see a kind of totality of the human presence.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is exactly
right.
Stories from the Eastern West.
Я Гулей Анастасія Васильівна.
My name is Anastasia Vasilyevna. I come from the Poltava Oblast, from a village called Hrabarivka.
Я пошла на пошту, тут музика в парку гра, молодіжь танцює.
I went to the post office. There was music playing in the park and some young people were dancing. Later that night, I could hear something, this rumbling across the cobblestones, a clattering, the sound of horses trotting. In the morning, we woke up and the war had started. On my way back to the village, they announced mobilization. There's drama everywhere, crying in every yard. Women are preparing little bundled sacks for their husbands. It's a horrible sight. All three of my brothers were called up. The oldest one was a teacher, and he was about to get married. The middle one, Vasya, was sent to the front. The youngest one, Hennadi, was a teacher too. He was called up and sent to fight in Finland. He lost one of his legs in the war. The middle one died in the Battle of Lviv. After the war, none of us ever talked about what we'd gone through. We just couldn't. Hennadi was in the siege of Leningrad. He couldn't talk about it. Couldn't repeat what he'd gone through. At home, we hardly ever talked about our odysseys, so to speak.
In 1943,
they started taking people to Germany for forced labor. Young people mostly, and me. I escaped one roundup, but the second time they caught me. And that's all we thought about from then on. Escape, nothing but escape. How could we work for Germans? My brothers are fighting them, and I'm supposed to work for them? How? Me and five of my friends were just waiting for the right moment.
Anastasia and her friends were transported west to an industrial area occupied by Nazi Germany. They were forced to work at a factory that produced some red powder they couldn't recognize and weren't told what it was. One day, they saw their chance at a Katowice train station and abandoned their convoy.
So all of us at once, we jumped to the side. Quick, and we're gone. Nobody is watching the door, and we run out of there. We crouch under the trains and crawl out on the other side of the station. We breathed a sigh of relief. Here, they can't catch us. They won't even try. At this point, we knew we had to head towards the border and cross it. And thank God, we somehow did. We floundered across Poland for 9 days and reached Rzeszów. When I looked at the map, I realized we'd done 250 kilometers in 9 days, on foot.
After this grueling march, Anastasia and her friends were caught and thrown into a Gestapo prison. This is where the horror of war really started for them.
They kept us there for a month. It was the first time I really felt afraid. I heard how they were killing people. They were executing sentences there and then. There was a Pole in our cell, an older lady, Mrs. Katarzyna. She'd been so beaten that they put her mattress on the ground. She couldn't even crawl up onto a bed. It was because she'd been hiding Jews. Even her husband didn't know about it, and she kept them at their home or in a barn and fed them. Somebody must have noticed and snitched. She and her husband both got death penalties. We saw her walk across the prison courtyard in a cherry red dress. Her hair was pleated. Beautiful. Our cellmate says, "Ladies, listen. You think we're going to hear a shot tonight, or won't we? We can't sleep. We just strain our ears. And in the morning, bang, once. Bang, twice. She and her husband both executed. The sound was so horrible. We knew it was for real. My God, that was when I really got frightened for the first time. Before, somehow, I wasn't really, but that sound. Later on, they put us onto a train. Oh, I remember how they had us get out in the middle of the night and then guided us to the camp. A terrible one. We didn't know what camp it was. We didn't know anything like it. There is this chain of light bulbs all in a line. You couldn't see where it ended or where it began. Right next to us, there were guards. Not Germans, but Yugoslavians or Czechs. They understood Russian, so I asked, "What is this place? A factory?" "No, you'll see." "Then what is it? Is it a plant?" "You'll see." He didn't say anything more. It was 43, the year 1943. It was that godforsaken Auschwitz-Birkenau.
Завезли нас туди, зразу дезінфекція, скидаєш себе все.
First thing, we were disinfected. You throw all your clothes off. They douse you in ice-cold water. You put on this striped apron, a striped dress, apron, and headscarf. They guide me to a barrack, and we wait for morning. We can hear there are other people in the barrack, but it's pitch dark. We realize there's a woman who understands Russian. We ask her where we are. "You'll see, you'll see." Only now I understand. She couldn't explain. You had to see it. But to describe it, it was hard to find the words.
На словах трудно. І зранку стригти.
And in the morning, shaving. I had two thick French braids. I had to undo them, and the hairdresser starts shearing entire stripes of hair off my head. She threw a pile of my hair on the floor. That was that. She cut it all off. She neatened what was left with a trimmer. Second procedure, tattooing a number. One by one, they make you sit. She stings you with a crossfader, etching your number, dot by dot. 61,369. I was in such a state that had they cracked my head open, I wouldn't have felt any pain. You don't understand. I felt as if I was dead already. Was I? Where was I? Dead or alive? They immediately let us know we weren't human. Forget your surname, your first name. Number. 61,369. That's it. Forget the rest. That's how my life in the camp started. They forced us to dig a ditch. Mud everywhere, and they gave us these awful clogs. We don't know how to walk with them on. You try to come out of a ditch, but your clogs just fall off and stay in it. You go down to get them back, and you drown in mud again. We just tire ourselves out. And that weather, rain and rain. One day, someone said, "Girls, let's stay in the barracks. Let the commandant dig the ditch himself. We're not going out." Our supervisor came in, and she shouts, "Raus, raus," but we're not moving. She left and came back with the commandant himself, some boogeyman. He came in, jumped on a wooden cot, and started firing his gun into the ceiling. Alles raus, alles raus. They put us in a line outside, down on our knees, hands up. And this reptile of a man walks along and counts, eins, zwei, drei, vier, and hits the fifth girl in her chest with his fist. He walked the whole line. Every fifth person got knocked down. We'd never seen anything like that before. We got really scared. They kept us on our knees for an hour and then let us go. "Let's go to the ditch," someone said. "To hell with them." We went to work. They beat our souls, our humanity out of us. One of our girls was sent to the crematorium once. She was a parachutist, Valya Mawazur. She'd gotten into a fight with her block supervisor, and they started pulling each other's hair. The camp commandant, Rudolf Hess, was called over, and he calmed them down quickly. But her supervisor never let it go. She kept her eye on Valya, and then, one day, she put her name down as one of the sick people who were to be burnt in the crematorium. That's why Valya was sent there. And these people are sitting in there like they're in some sort of phantom amphitheater. Commandant Hess comes in with a bunch of attendants, doctors with pincers. They check on people's teeth. If they find a gold tooth, they pull it out so it doesn't get lost. They were taking them all to Switzerland. They ended up with tons. But then, Hess recognizes Valya, and he says, "What is this little Russian doing here? Get out of here, now." She ran out of there, came back, and told us where she'd been and what she saw there. We see three crematoriums every day. Every day they herd people into them. just keep hurting them and hurting them and hurting them. A transport comes. People disembark. They get sorted. There are women with children there. And we see it and just want to scream. People, run away. Some of you will be killed, but maybe at least someone will make it. But here, all of you are going to die.
Ідуть. Ну, це передач.
It's impossible to describe. There's a kid bouncing a ball or pulling a little toy car on a string loudly. And we know that this is the way to the crematorium, and they have to go down it. That's that.
In January 1945, the Nazi Germans decided to liquidate the camp. They began moving all the inmates to other camps and dismantling the gas chambers. According to historians, this process opened up one of the most tragic chapters of the Auschwitz-Birkenau camp. It's known today as the Death March. It was preceded by numerous executions and a meticulous search for any remaining Jewish inmates.
There was one Jewish woman with us. She was hiding among the Poles. Mrs. Rose, that's what we called her. She was Jewish, but her husband was Polish. They had two kids. She'd do whatever it took to keep her secret. She'd take the worst assignments, voluntarily, like emptying feces containers and making compost and other things we tried to avoid doing. She was first out. One day, in January 1945, we came back from work, and they were all gone. Her daughters, Basha and Henrika, and Mrs. Rose herself. On the last night, right before they transported us to different camps, they executed all three of them. None was left.
Марш смерті.
The death march.
А нас утром.
They lined us up in the morning and led us out of the camp in rows of five. And then a huge caravan joined us. Or we joined a huge caravan. I don't even know. You could hardly see anything because if you stepped aside or tried to run, they'd shoot you instantly. So we had no idea where the procession started or ended. And of course we're on foot, in those wooden clogs. There was this immense clacking against the cobblestones, like a song about being shackled. We passed through villages, and you could tell the people there had already given everything they had to the starving ones. But still, they'd throw a beetroot, or a cabbage, or a turnip. They couldn't hand them to us, so they were throwing them towards us. They tried offering buckets of water, too. But who could go over and fetch that water? You'd be killed. We kept hearing shots and seeing bodies left behind in ditches. If you stopped for a moment, if you couldn't march anymore, you were killed. Finally, we get to a station. Nobody knows where we are. We're told to get on board a train, but we only see open coal wagons there. Not even cattle ones, just metal open wagons full of snow. And off we go. We're suffering, but we think, the hell with it all. Maybe we'll die, but it can't get any worse than it was in Auschwitz. Wherever you're taking us, it's not going to be any worse. How long was the journey? God only knows.
Anastasia was transported to the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. There, her health deteriorated even more due to the extreme lack of food rations and epidemics of typhus and jaundice. At some point, she was so weak she could barely move.
Запам'ятались мені последні часи.
I remember those last moments. I remember the room whirling above me, but I barely notice. I had no strength left. But then I hear cars driving and people shouting in all these different languages. You're free. You're coming back home. Your homeland is waiting for you. It was all so joyful. The healthier ones, the more recent arrivals among us, were running alongside the cars and tanks and kissing the tracks they left behind. And I was lying there. I couldn't even raise my hand. I was just numb. No strength left. Not enough to react in any way. But I don't know. Some angel or whatever else had mercy on me and saved me.
Anastasia was rescued and eventually returned home. Nothing was easy in the years to come, but she moved on to have a normal life and start a family.
She loves gardening nowadays, especially growing tulips and roses. Her family visits her often. A few minutes after we finished the interview, she became a different person. She joked a lot, mocking current Ukrainian politics, as well as our reporter who was on a diet and had refused to eat the cake she'd offered. You would never have guessed she was the same person that had told us the story you just heard.
For a while, it seemed like the horrors of the past had gone. But things are never that simple.
No, it's all still in me. Wherever I go, it doesn't go away. Every time arthritis or arthrosis doesn't let me sleep, and there's no one to talk to. It's been many years since the war, but whenever I read something, a newspaper or a book, and I see a capital O waiting somewhere for me, I quickly turn the page. It awakens fear in me. Why? Because of Auschwitz. Because Auschwitz starts with O in my language.
Не допустіть такого ніколи.
So please, never let it happen again. Never. Never even let it into your thoughts that a person should do something like that to another person. Every person has the right to live. To live and die with dignity.
Тільки допомагайте один другому. Прожити якнайкраще.
Please, help each other to live as best you can.
Помагайте.
Please, help each other.
This episode of Stories from the Eastern West was produced by Move Me Media for Culture PL and hosted by Adam Zhuavsky and me, Nitzan Reisner.
It was reported and written by Wojciech Elekczak and Jenny Klimakin. It was edited by Wojciech and me, and Wojciech did all the sound design and music.
Make sure to subscribe or check our feed next month. Once again, we'll go back to the times of World War II, but in a much different setting.
And if you want to learn anything else about the story you just heard, The show notes can be found in your podcast app or on the Stories from the East and West website at sftew.com. See you next month. Bye.